Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, March 12th, 2025, on 91.7 FM WHUS Doors. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meneza, who's actually here. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Here's what's going on. I did the brilliant thing of deciding to give up caffeine because I was feeling pretty good last Thursday and Friday morning. And then I woke up on Saturday morning like a truck hit me. And I said, I wonder if this is because I'm doing too much caffeine. And of course, if you feel like that and then you consume caffeine, you feel better. So I think I had a little bit and I felt a little bit, but I can't go through this going to sleep, waking up as though I hadn't slept the night before. And that doesn't happen every night. If I had a reasonably relaxing day before, even if I have caffeine, I feel pretty good on the next day. But the combination of sipping on caffeine while working all day, which is my most intense, stressful thing that I do because I'm going nonstop for many hours without a break, I wanted to try giving up caffeine again. So if you give up on caffeine quickly, you don't feel good afterwards. And the last Sunday that I was available, fortunately, I didn't have anything that I had to do. I had some things that I could do, and I didn't do them. I didn't go to Ron's spin class, and I didn't go to the UConn game. I really just stayed in my pajamas and stayed home. And that was a good thing to do because now I have more energy. I still have, my head still feels weird. It's a slight headache, slightly lightheaded. It was worse yesterday. And so when you do caffeine withdrawal, most doctors, and I even, will recommend don't go cold turkey. Don't stop abruptly. That you want to reduce your caffeine over a number of days, especially if you have to function. Because caffeine does help you to function. Caffeine, if your body is used to having it on board, it's used to having the stimulant. And when you withdraw it abruptly, then you don't have that stimulation. And what is actually happening is caffeine is an adenosine blocker, and you have adenosine receptors in your brain, and adenosine is one of the things that makes you sleepy at night, and caffeine blocks those adenosine receptors. So whenever you use a substance that blocks a receptor, what will happen is your body will go ahead and make more receptors. And so if you suddenly stop the substance, you have more adenosine, and all of a sudden the adenosine is going to bond to a lot more receptors, so you have a much bigger adenosine effect. And adenosine is one of those things that is low in the morning and rises in the evening. But if you have too many adenosine receptors, you're still going to have some adenosine bonded in the morning, or more than you want to, so that you're going to feel sleepy. And, you know, I have the problem that I do not metabolize caffeine well. I'm a slow metabolizer of caffeine, so a little goes a long way. So if I have a lot, I have a lot on board, and I have a lot of adenosine blockage, which means that when I stop, I'm going to have a lot of adenosine binding, and I'm going to feel like a truck absolutely hit me. So when you go through withdrawal from caffeine, you can get a lot of symptoms. You can get headaches. If you're a person who gets migraines, you can get migraines just because you have an upset in your equilibrium. And the thing is, caffeine is also a phosphodiesterase inhibitor. So phosphodiesterase is an enzyme that breaks down catecholamines. And catecholamines are neurotransmitters that make you feel good. Epinephrine and norepinephrine give you that get up and go. They're made by your adrenal glands, and they are things that increase your heart rate. They're sympathomimetics, they're sympathetic stimulants. So they give you that energy. They give you that fight or flight. They make your heart beat faster. You breathe better. They send more blood into your brain so that you're more aware and alert. So that if you had to run away from the bear, you're aware of where the bear is. So if you suddenly stop that, it stands to reason you're going to be less aware and less alert. And that is why some people who have attention issues, like they have ADHD, their drug of choice is caffeine. And if you are a fast metabolizer of caffeine, like Ron is, if you suddenly stop caffeine, you're going to metabolize it very quickly. So you're not going to get the side effects. So you don't have a lot of caffeine around at any one time. So you keep having to drink it to have the effect. And so when you block it, you're not going to have that hyperadenosine effect. The more, the slower metabolizer you are, the worse that adenosine effect is going to be. So I unfortunately, and the more caffeine you're drinking, the worse the effect is going to be. So I was doing, I'm a slow metabolizer, and I was drinking enough, you know, the equivalent of probably a cup of coffee a day, maybe not quite, because I can barely do a cup of coffee at a time. What I do is I sip on vegan lattes. So a latte with some kind of either vegetarian creamer, you know, non-dairy creamer, or with like oat milk in it or something. So when I say vegetarian creamer, I'm not talking about, you know, the really chemically ones. I get some natural creamers, and some of them have sugar in them, which doesn't help either. And I noticed too, when I stopped having the latte with the sugary oat milk creamer in it, my taste for sweet increased. So I was drinking kombucha, which does have a tiny bit of caffeine in it. It was like anywhere from 1 to 15 milligrams of caffeine in 8 ounces, which is not very much because I don't sit and drink 8 ounces of kombucha at a time. So maybe I'm getting a couple of milligrams, which is a lot less than what I would be getting in coffee. So I noticed that the kombucha tasted sweet to me, where it doesn't if I'm drinking those lattes, because I'm getting used to that intense sweet hit first thing in the morning. And one of the things I have to tell you is, if you are somebody who's trying to lose weight, if one of the things you're doing is you're having coffee with creamer, whether it's, a not so natural one from the store or a natural one with something sweet in it, that's going to be make it harder for you to lose weight, because you're doing the first thing you're taking in the morning is a hit of fat and sugar. So you're telling your body it feels good and it tastes good, but what you're doing is you're increasing this neurotransmitter in your brain called neuropeptide Y, and neuropeptide Y turns off your satiety signals. So satiety is how satiated you feel, when you're satiated, you feel like you're not hungry anymore. So that's why you can eat 6 pieces of pizza, because it's fat and starch together, or you can eat a whole pint of Ben and Jerry's, because it's fat and sugar together, ice cream, whatever ice cream that you eat, you can eat it and eat it and eat it. Whereas if you tried to eat the same number of calories of salad, you wouldn't be able to do it because of all the fiber and water. That after maybe 200 calories of salad, you're like, I'm good, because the fiber and the water are satiating. They stretch your stomach's receptors, and so you feel like you're full. So having that hit of latte first thing in the morning, even if you enjoy it. Now, if you're doing that and you're at a weight and you're happy and healthy and you don't have headaches and you feel good, then by all means. But if you are having trouble losing weight, and that's one of the things you're doing, that's one hack that you can do. If you aren't ready to give up caffeine, you can either have the latte and have some non-dairy healthy creamer that's made from, say, oat milk or coconut milk, and that has no sweetener in it, and then put a bunch of cinnamon in it. And if you want it sweet, then put a little stevia in it or monk fruit, or teach yourself to drink it black. And if you drink it black, then you can put a bunch of cinnamon in it. And cinnamon makes it taste like it's sweet, and it's good for you. It helps to regulate your blood sugar. It tastes good. And you'll need less sweet, or maybe you won't need any sweet at all. And again, you can try using monk fruit or stevia if you want to. So anyway, when you withdraw from caffeine, it affects the circulation to your brain, which is why you get headaches. So when you drink caffeine, caffeine messes with how much circulation gets to your brain. I think it, in one sense, it increases it, in one sense, it calms it down. And when you get headaches, it's because you've got constricted blood vessels where circulation is trying to get into them, and it's having a hard time. So it causes pressure, and then it causes that pain. Also, caffeine affects circulation in other ways. So it affects your musculoskeletal circulation as well. And that's why when you drink caffeine, you might it increases circulation to your muscles, and then if you take it away, you can get body aches and joint pain. So you get the headaches. The headaches are a combination of muscle pain and changes in circulation. So all this settles out after a while. Now I'm on day 3. I tried to ride my bike. I didn't feel well enough to even ride at all on anything yesterday. And today I actually rode and I felt pretty good, but I had palpitations while I was on the bike. And I have the occasional premature atrial contraction, which is a minor, whenever they do my resting EKG, I have a perfect resting EKG, but I do get PACs every so often. I also get them if my Lyme is kicked up. And so today I had some I know that I tend to get them if I've had too much caffeine or if I'm dehydrated or too tired or too much sugar. If I'm not feeling well, it tends to happen. And I thought, oh, well, I'll be less likely to get them if I don't have any caffeine. Well, the thing was I exerted myself and my body's used to having the caffeine on board. So my heart hasn't acclimated yet entirely to having the to not having the caffeine on board. I think the answer to that is to do gentler exercise. You definitely want to exercise if you can. If you have the energy to exercise while you're withdrawing from caffeine, it'll make you feel better. But maybe not at a high rate. And I was pushing it a little bit. I was doing some sprints, and they have a cool thing on Zwift right now. Some kind of a month-long badge hunter thing. So I got a badge today, oh boy, and went up a level and stuff. And so anyway, so I did a couple of sprints, and when I did the sprint, I had this palpitation, and I had to sit down and breathe, and it finally went away. And then I spun easy for another 20 minutes, and then I was all right, and now I'm all right. My heart's fine. But while you're withdrawing from caffeine, you can get arrhythmias, and if your arrhythmias are bad and don't stop, you have to go to the doctor. If they're occasional and you don't notice them, you might want to mention it to your doctor, but if they mostly don't happen, or they happen while you're withdrawing and then they go completely away, then you're probably fine. Arrhythmias are always something to mention. If you have palpitations, you want to mention that to your doctor. Your doctor's going to want to listen to your heart, ask you some questions about it. If they're happening a lot, then you're going to get a heart monitor. In my case, I don't think they're happening a lot. In any case, I'm going to see my doctor on Wednesday. So I'll have a chat with him about it. So arrhythmias can happen as a result of consuming caffeine, and arrhythmias can happen while you're withdrawing from caffeine, while the heart is acclimating to not having the caffeine on board. You can also have, you can get nauseous. I think the digestive upset, because we know that caffeine affects your digestive system, because what does caffeine help you with first thing in the morning, Ron?
Helps get moving.
That's right. Helps you get moving downstairs, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not just talking about walking downstairs. I'm talking about walking over to the bathroom. If you notice that coffee helps you be regular, and then you're not so regular, you can see that coffee affects whether you have bowel movements, because it is caffeine. The flavonoids in caffeine, the polyphenols in caffeine, definitely stimulate your liver to work, and they stimulate bile flow. So that's going to make you more regular. I am fortunate that I'm regular anyway, and if I eat plenty of fiber, everything's fine. And I'm pleased that that's been occurring, that that hasn't been an issue. One of the things that happened is when I got the rhythm issue, I also became kind of queasy. And queasiness, nausea, some people get really sick. They actually get nausea and vomiting when they withdraw from caffeine. And you might not go that far, but you might not have an appetite for a couple of days. That happens too, because of the changes in circulation in your digestive system. That goes away. You might be achier. You might have more muscle aches and stuff while you're getting off the caffeine. You might go to the bathroom. You might be a little bit constipated. You might also find that you're urinating more or you're urinating less. It could go either way. As I said, if you have a person has migraines, you might have more migraines. So all of these are things to think about. So what do you do if you want to get off caffeine? Some of you are saying, why would I want to get off caffeine? And I'm saying, you know, it all depends on the person. I feel like it's probably ultimately not great for me. And especially when I find that I push myself at work and then I feel like I can't function. I'm so tired I can't function that I sleep. My sleep isn't great. And then I wake up the next morning, I feel like I haven't slept. So that's not good for me. So caffeine, if you consume too much caffeine, if you're sensitive to it like I am, it can cause insomnia. When you withdraw from it, while you're withdrawing, you can also have insomnia because I think it's because your nerves and neurotransmitters are resetting. And so while that's going on, you may have some trouble sleeping. And I think the answer to that is, on the one hand, to get more rest. And on the other hand, if you can tolerate it, get some exercise. So yesterday I wasn't able to do cardio because I just didn't feel well. I did some gentle yoga and then I did a restorative yoga class. And I was certainly able to do, I'm always able to do those. I'm always up for those unless I'm really, really sick. I'm always up for a restorative class. Thank you, Angie at Yono. Thank you also to Devi online and Cassandra online, who are my go-tos on the YouTube. And there are many, many, by the way, there are many restorative and yin classes on YouTube that you can find. And, I would explore it and pick who you like. So I'm certainly able to do that. So while you're recovering, if you decided that, you know what, I really want to give caffeine withdrawal a try. I do that thing where I get up in the morning and I have that sweet latte. I don't think it's really good for me. I have that fatigue. I really want to give being off caffeine a try. So if you're going to do that, one of the things to think about is don't do what I did, which is go cold turkey. The reason I went cold turkey is because I was going to do it over a weekend and because I felt so bad on Saturday, I didn't think it made sense to consume more caffeine, which means I'm going to prolong feeling bad like that. That if I just got off it and suffered for a few days, then I'll feel better. Like in a week's time, I'll feel a whole lot better. And we'll see if that happens. Right now, I know that I can see that I feel better right now than I did yesterday. I'm not perfect because I still have, I'm still a little lightheaded because you can get lightheaded and dizziness and equilibrium issues when you're getting off caffeine. Why? Because of the changes in circulation in your brain, and that has to settle out. So your nerves and neurotransmitters need to reset. So the circulation to your brain has to regularize again, and that takes a few days to happen. And so if you read sources to find out how long it takes for the caffeine effects, for the withdrawal symptoms to happen, the symptoms tend to be worse 24 to, I've read something like 24 to 51 hours. So I would have stopped, I guess my last caffeine dose was probably sometime on Friday evening, so I would be at my worst sometime, like Saturday, Sunday morning, I felt awful. So that's right within that window. And so 2 days would have been Sunday evening, and I didn't feel great. I was starting to feel a little bit better last night. And this morning, I'm a bit better again. Again, not all better. I still feel like I could spend some time drinking lots of water and resting. It can be worth it because I think in the long run, you're going to have less muscle soreness, so caffeine will, in the short term, like if you have a headache, if you have a migraine, caffeine will abort the migraine. It tends to abort the migraine. That's why there are pills that you can get, over-the-counter drugs that you can get that are migraine fighters, and they have aspirin, acetaminophen, and caffeine in them because caffeine will dilate the blood vessels. It's constrict the blood vessels in the brain. And so it makes you feel better quickly. But if you consume caffeine regularly, you're going to be more likely to get migraines because you can't be on an even drip of caffeine over 24 hours because you have to sleep. So during the time that you're sleeping, you come off it. And so you have this situation where you're up and down and up and down, and your energy is going up and down, and all of the organs and systems that caffeine affects go up and down. And so, since you have to sleep, you're going to have a time of the day, a long time of the day, whatever the time between when you go to sleep, and because most people stop caffeine in the afternoon or, you know, midday, and then they don't have any more until the next morning. So you're doing a caffeine fast for all that time. And so you're in a low point in the morning. So overnight, you're not getting that constant drip. So there's going to be changes in the circulation to your brain. So in the long term, because of that fluctuation in circulation to your brain, you're more likely to get migraines. So an acute dose of caffeine can help you to abort a migraine right now. But if you consume caffeine every day, you're more likely to get them. And the other thing is caffeine can be irritating to your digestive system. So, caffeine can give you stomach upset. It can give you heartburn and reflux. Some people it makes them constipated, and some people it gives them loose stools. So it can go either way. And so all of those systems are affected. So it definitely has an effect on the autonomic nervous system. There are people who have POTS, postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, who use caffeine. They take caffeine in the morning, and it keeps their blood pressure tends to be low and not high enough to keep them upright comfortably. So they use caffeine to help with that. So if you're somebody like me when I had postural hypotension, I had orthostatic intolerance, and my blood pressure would go up, not down. So now I'm on a blood pressure med, and probably the other thing that will happen is the blood pressure med will work better because it's not fighting with the caffeine. You know, that I have, if you take caffeine and take a blood pressure med, you're kind of at cross purposes because caffeine can raise your blood pressure. So now I can be on that low dose of blood pressure med, and it'll probably work better. So I just have to sweat out a bunch of days, with the symptoms, and probably by tomorrow I'll feel a fair bit better, I'm hoping. Because today I don't have a lot going on. I'm going to be able to get more rest today. And I'm just hoping that it will be worth it. And so I noticed today I have an appetite, which is good. You know, I'm going to be inclined to eat. And so that's good. And I'm making sure to have lots of water. So while you're going through the caffeine withdrawal, what you want to do, like I said, is you want to do it. Have a couple of days where you don't have much to do or even anything to do. If you can just stay in bed and rest, or just do whatever you feel like doing, where you're not in a place where you have to go to work, or you have to go to an event, or you have to go do, there are things that you have to do. Do it on days where you don't have anything like that for the first couple days, so that by the time you have something you have to do, you're feeling at least a bit better. That's why I started on Saturday. On Saturday, I did a bit of running around, and I probably shouldn't have. And so yesterday I did nothing. I really did nothing. So right now I'm drinking water with electrolytes in it, which is a good idea because it'll get you hydrated. And water with electrolytes, more than water without them, will help you absorb the water better and keep your circulation going. And because you're getting these changes in circulation and fluctuations in water flow to your kidneys and your heart and your brain, and the electrolytes will help keep it up. And doing all the vagal help things, if you look at things that help with vagal toning, doing deep breathing, rubbing behind your ear, pulling on your earlobe and rubbing the top of just above your where your ear canal opens up, all those things can help. Getting a massage, taking magnesium, taking extra naps, just resting in general, getting exercise as tolerated. And I think I did exercise more than as tolerated. So I'm actually not going to do cardio again until Wednesday. And on Wednesday, I'll do easier cardio. So those are all things that can help. Drinking herbal tea, drinking things that settle your stomach, like ginger tea. Ron made himself some ginger tea because his belly was bothering him. So you can drink ginger tea, you can eat candied ginger, you can get ginger powder and use it as a spice in your food. Just ginger, whatever form you can get. If you're not crazy about the way ginger tastes, you can take ginger capsules. So I'm actually putting ginger syrup in my lime medicine. So yeah, how does this caffeine thing interact with the lime and the orthostatic stuff? It was probably not a great thing. So that's why I'm thinking it might be better. I was feeling rather ungrounded, and now I want to feel more grounded. So I'm feeling like the caffeine was making me just, you know, rip through my life and run too fast. And I just want to feel more grounded. I want my yoga to be more effective. I want my sleep to be more effective. And I want my rest to be more effective. Because when your sleep and rest are more effective, you're more effective in your life. And in fact, I was reading something. There was an article about how sleep and rest are the most important things you can do, because sleep and rest turn into anything else that you may not even need special diets or special exercise. Just if you get adequate sleep and rest, then all those other things tend to fall into place. And people just are so sleep deprived all the time in our society. So getting adequate sleep. So I'm not going to go into how you get adequate sleep, because I wanted to focus on the caffeine today. But I just wanted to say that if you find that you're really cycling through caffeine, that you feel really raring and ready to go, and then you're having energy crashes. If you're not having energy crashes and you can go a day without caffeine and you feel okay, then don't worry about it, then you can have caffeine. But if you're noticing that you're having energy crashes and one of the things you do is you consume caffeine to keep yourself going, then you might want to consider a trial of no caffeine and see if you feel better. And I'm going to do that. I am drinking kombucha, like I said, that has a little tiny bit of caffeine in it, but I think that's all I'm going to have in terms of any caffeine. And I'm going to drink a lot of electrolyte water and just get my rest and see what happens. So there's that. So just one more mention now, if you're listening to this on WHUS or Patreon or Buzzsprout, it's past the Know Your Farmer Fair, but I'm recording this before the Know Your Farmer Fair. And if you're on Facebook Live or Instagram Live, the Know Your Farmer Fair for the next couple of days will not have happened yet. So I'm going to mention it one more time. The Know Your Farmer Fair is happening in Willimantic. It's the 10th anniversary of the Know Your Farmer Fair. You can meet a farmer, create a relationship, and build community. And it should be a lot of fun. It's happening on Saturday, March 8th, 2025, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. There is no admission. It's happening at the Wyndham Community Center. That's at 1 Gilson Square in Willimantic, Connecticut. Everyone is welcome. There'll be local products there like vegetables, fruit, meat, cheese, honey, maple syrup, flour, soap, fiber, and more farm-made items. It's sponsored by, it's a farmer's market. It's a CSA fair. There are kids' activities, and there will be a seed swap. Also, Sarah wanted me to tell you that there are going to be food trucks there. Twin Beaks will be there, and Click will be supplying coffee. And here I did this whole thing about avoiding caffeine, and now I'm telling you about the coffee. So the coffee should be really good. Again, if you're not having trouble with caffeine, by all means, have the coffee. But anyway, so remember, Know Your Farmer Fair, Saturday, March 8th, 2025, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., there is no charge for admission. The Wyndham Community Center, 1 Gilson Square, Willimantic, Connecticut, and everyone is welcome. So hope to see you there. Are you going, Ron?
Yeah,
I was planning on it.
You're definitely going. Are you going to be wandering around, or are you going to be at a table?
Wandering around. I am not at a table this year.
Oh, because you were at a table last year?
2 years ago.
2 years ago.
Last year I was wandering around.
So this year you're going to go and schmooze.
Right. Well, we're always looking for farmers that are willing to sell to us for the Mansfield Farm to Families program.
Right. So that's a good place for you.
So we can sometimes get a good find there. We found a great honey guy there last year because of that. So you know, that's why we kind of just use it as a scouting mission more than anything else.
So are you, so other farm to families people will be there?
I think Dorothy will be there with me, but I'm not sure if she's, I have to check with her. I haven't talked to her yet this week about it.
All right. So there's another interesting, there's a couple more interesting things that happened this week. There was a measles outbreak in Texas, and people are turning and looking at Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and blaming him. I don't know if you want to blame him, but, and this whole outrage, pearl-clutching blame game is really not a lot of fun.
And it's everyone needs to be blamed for something these days. It's part of the division that we have in our country right now.
I don't know why we can't go, oh, look at this problem we have. Let's look at why it happened and let's provide solutions. And by the way, these children have measles. How about show them some compassion? And yes, fine. So maybe they didn't get vaccinated, but you know what? They didn't get vaccinated because their parents made a decision not to vaccinate them. And now their children are very sick and some of them died. That's very sad. Can we send them some compassion?
Right. You know, this idea had a religious aspect.
They might have had, well, there was a community of Mennonites that had it. And so, And there was, so in the Mennonite community, they don't get vaccinated. And then, but Mennonites are not entirely insular. There are Mennonites who have businesses and they sell to us English. And they probably interacted with English and somebody had measles and they brought it to the community and they're largely unvaccinated. So it spread. And so getting enraged and blaming people really doesn't work. It doesn't solve, it wastes time, it wastes energy, and it doesn't solve problems. So so here's the thing. So measles is on the rise because there are a lot of communities that don't vaccinate. There are people here who don't vaccinate their children. And right now what's going on is I get to see families of people who have unvaccinated children because they can't go anywhere else. I mean, and so they, I mean, where they can go is the ER. The ER and the urgent care won't refuse them. But pediatricians won't allow them in their practices, especially if they're part of a company. So if they're part of a company, the company rules are, say that if you're in the practice, if your child in the practice, you have to be vaccinated. And so so I get to see those people but I have a rule in my practice that you can't come in if you're acutely ill. And so we try to screen them once in a while, somebody slips in, but, you know, if they slip in, they have to mask. I mask, I open the window, and then I take care of them. If they have a cold, then I give them tea and I offer them, elderberries, vitamin C, zinc chews. And, you know, once I know they're okay. Now I'm very fortunate, knock on wood. I have not had a cold this year. I'm taking all kinds of, herbs that are probably antiviral. They're certainly immune stimulating, as well as getting rid of my Lyme. So I think that's why I haven't had a cold this year, and you haven't either. Yep. Right, and it's already March, and we did not get a cold this year.
It's unusual.
Last year we got a cold. We had a cold around Valentine's Day, and you were better by Valentine's Day, and I was not, and that's why I didn't go to the chocolate festival last year, because I had a cold. So anyway, So how I do it in my practice, I will let unvaccinated people in, but if somebody's acutely ill with anything, they can't come in. So, and by not coming in, either they have to reschedule or we offer them virtual so they can have their visit virtually. And so people do that. So I'm so grateful that virtual is now an option and a lot of insurance companies cover virtual visits. So I can see you virtually if you want to. Anyway, So in terms of this measles outbreak, everybody's concerned about RFK Jr. because they say he's anti-vax. And I don't think it's as simple as that. I know he's said things in the past that are not pro-vaccination, and then he said other things that he's not anti-vax. So it's hard to know exactly where he stands. And, you know, he had so much backlash for appearing to be anti-vax that he's had to walk it back a bit. So I'm not sure exactly where he stands on all of this, because he did say something about how all of his children had been vaccinated. Anyway, here's the thing with measles. Measles is extremely contagious. Remember back in the COVID pandemic, when, for example, we had that choir in Washington State where one person had COVID and then the whole choir got COVID and some people may even have died. And like many people in the choir then got sick. So we learned that COVID is spread by aerosols. So what aerosols means is when people talk or breathe. So go ahead and if you're listening, not if you're driving, but if you're somewhere where you're sitting and you're comfortable, take your hand and put it in front of your face. Now exhale onto your hand. What does it feel like? It feels kind of warm and damp, right? When you exhale moisture, which is why if you talk a lot, you get thirsty. And so when I'm at the office, I always have water on hand. And sometimes I run out of water in the office. I have to get staff to bring me more water because I can't be without water. So I always have water because I'm talking so much, and I always have lip balm, and I will put lip balm while I'm with patients if I remember, like if I feel like, oh, my lips are dry because I'm talking so much. So when you talk, you exhale moisture. Those are aerosols. That's not droplets, that's aerosols. Droplets is what happens when you cough or sneeze. So, and that's where the whole 6 feet thing came from. That droplets tend to travel a maximum of 6 feet. So that's why you have that 6 foot, you know, people sit 6 feet away from you. You stay 6 feet away. But aerosols go into the environment and they come out while you're breathing. Now, some illnesses are spread more by droplets and some illnesses are spread more by aerosols. So if COVID is being breathed out into the air, there's a pretty good chance you're going to catch COVID because it's very, very contagious. It's not as contagious as measles, though, but it is spread by aerosols. So that's sitting 6 feet away. If you're in an enclosed room with a lot of people, you're more likely to catch COVID. If there's a lot of fresh air and circulation going through, you are less likely. So if you're in the open air, you're less likely to catch it. So that's why, you know, if I wind up seeing somebody who's sick, I open the windows. Open the windows. I have my HEPA filter going. We mask up, and then I'm less likely to be impacted by aerosols. And you're going to be less likely to be impacted by aerosols the bigger the room is. And if you are further away from them, although the 6 feet may not make that much difference, what makes more difference is how big the enclosure is. And so if you open the windows, that really helps. Anyway, so the thing with measles, if you are in a room where measles is being aerosoled, there's an excellent chance you will catch it, and it's higher than COVID. So we're talking over 90% likelihood of catching the measles if you're in that room. So that's why it's important to be immune to it. And measles, when you get a measles vaccine, it's not an mRNA vaccine. And so it still will cause inflammation, and it's hard to find just measles vaccines. It's easy to get a booster for MMR. 99.3 WMMR Philadelphia. No.
No.
MMR stands for measles, mumps, and rubella. It is also Central Jersey and, you know, Greater Philadelphia's favorite rock station because it's WMMR. It's not, and that's a funny thing because MMR is measles, mumps, and rubella, but that's not why it's called that in Philadelphia. Do you know why it's called that in Philadelphia?
No.
It's because of the mummers, and nobody knows what the mummers are.
That's correct.
On January 1st every year, on New Year's Day, they have the Mummers Parade. And the Mummers are these organizations of string bands. And they're these people that dress up in these really fancy costumes, kind of like Las Vegas showgirls or New Orleans, at these really hilarious fancy costumes. And they march down the street in Philadelphia and they play the banjo. They play banjo music. And that's the Mummers Parade. It's a Philly tradition. And that's why the radio station's called WMMR. I don't know if everybody knows that. People don't know about WMMR. I still listen to it because, you know, I used to be nostalgic. Like, every time I go to New Jersey, I get to listen to WMMR. But, and then I couldn't. And now they're streaming. So you can listen to anything, anywhere. So I'll listen to Portland, Oregon, and I'll listen to WMMR. And we're really kind of far away to get WPLR, but we listen to that sometimes. But you should listen to WHUS because that's what we're listening to right now, right? But anyway, so that I digressed. So MMR is the vaccination that you would be likely to get the booster for. Now, before you go and get a booster, if you're an adult, and you might want to know if you still have antibodies to it. And if you do, you may not need a vaccination. So what I can do, what any physician can do for you, is they can offer you titers. They can you can have your blood drawn and you have antibody titers done. So what that means is there are tests from ordinary blood labs, from the ordinary lab that you usually go to that any doctor can order for you who was able to order labs for you. And they tell you if you have adequate antibodies to be immune to these illnesses. So you can order measles, mumps, and rubella titers. You can order pertussis antibodies, and you can order diphtheria and tetanus toxoid, antitoxoid. So you can ask your doctor to order all of those. And if you have adequate antitoxoid and if you have adequate antibodies to MMR, you may not need to get vaccinated. If you got vaccinated anyway, it would probably be fine. If you're somebody who doesn't react badly to vaccines and you never have, and you're concerned and you know you haven't been vaccinated for MMR since you're a kid, then you could just get one. But for me, because I tend to react so strongly to things, I would get my titers done. And I had my titers done a few years ago and I was okay for everything. I don't know if that's true now. And my situation, I might want to get my titers done again. So anyway, the thing is, should children get these vaccinations? Well, what you have to realize is every time you get a vaccination, you are kicking up the immune system. That is what is happening. And you don't know if you're going to be that person that gets so much inflammation that you wind up getting neuroinflammation. It can happen. Whether you think vaccines are effective, and they are, they still can cause enough inflammation in some people to be dangerous. So what do you do if you have a child that you're concerned about whether they should get vaccinated? Well, one of the best things to do is if you're going to get them vaccinated, is get them vaccinated if you have a doctor who's willing to do one vaccine at a time. So you don't do an MMR. You do a measles, and then you wait. See if the kid gets symptoms, you know, give the kid a couple of days to recover from the vaccination, and then wait a month or more and get another one and get mumps, and then wait a month or more and get rubella. To give a child, 10, 20 vaccines in a sitting is just a huge hit to your immune system, because you don't get, it's unusual for you to even get two viruses at the same time. You can get flu and COVID at the same time, but it's unusual. It happens, but it's unusual. So why would you give measles, mumps, and rubella at the same time? Well, the reason the vaccines are combined is for convenience. And the issue is that they're concerned that, between having to get the kids in to get the vaccines and having people be compliant, it's easier to just give them all at once. That's why they do it. But there, you do have an issue with people having an inflammatory response that you don't want. And if they get neuroinflammation, that's where the idea that perhaps these vaccines can contribute to autism. Do vaccines directly cause autism? I'm not willing to absolutely say that. I do have parents of autistic children who have said to me, she was fine and she was speaking until she got that vaccine. And then she stopped talking and she didn't talk anymore. So anyway, it's worth talking about. By the way, this is interesting, and I'm not sure what I'm going to do about it, but I did read something recently about a test you can get. There's a test called the FRAT test, and what it does is it tests for folic acid receptor antibodies. And if you have folic acid receptor antibodies, you might be more likely to have spectrum issues. And so there's a special test that you can get done to test for these folic acid receptor antibodies, folate receptor antibodies. And if you have them, then you take a different form of folic acid. You don't take straight up folate. You take folinic acid, and it might help with some symptoms. So I think I'm going to look into that and see if I can, if that's something I can administer or help people get. And then if I can administer folinic acid is an easy thing to get. It's not very expensive. It's just an activated form of folic acid. And if you have, and that can be more important than even the MTHFR, where you have the trouble converting from folate to activated folic acid. So should you get a measles vaccine? Should you check your measles vaccinations? This right now, because a lot of people are not getting vaccinated, there's more likely the spread of measles. So it might not be a bad idea to ask your doc. If you don't mind getting vaccinated, you could just go get a measles vaccine. You might have to get it prescribed by your doc. And your doc may have it in their office, or you may have to go to get a script, and then you have to go to the drugstore to get it done. And I think that's generally how it happens. Now I don't know that docs keep the vaccines on hand, that usually you have to go to the drugstore to have it happen. I know that CVS is always contacting me. Hey, get your this vaccine, get your that vaccine. Anyway, the other thing that was really interesting is, RFK Jr. has been promoting getting rid of seed oils. So, again, you know, whatever you think about the guy, he has a point in terms of the seed oils, because seed oils are not hydrogenated. If they are in perfect condition, they can be helpful for you. They have polyunsaturated fats in them that you can use in your body, and your body will use them to reduce inflammation and for structure. But because they're polyunsaturated, they have a bunch of double bonds in them, and double bonds and triple bonds are not so stable. Single bonds are stable. So when you have saturated fat, the bonds between the two carbons are bonded very tightly. When it's saturated means that those, the bonds between the carbons are saturated with hydrogen. All right. So when you have a carbon atom, carbon has, it has four places to bond. And so when it bonds to another carbon atom, that's one of the bonds. And then it has three other sites that it can bond stuff. Well, it can bond again to that second carbon atom. And then if it's in a chain, in a chain, and then it's a fatty acid, then it's going to bond, to hydrogens. So you're going to have two carbons are in the middle of a polyunsaturated fat loop, they're going to be bonded twice to the other carbon next to them, and then they're going to be bonded to two hydrogens. If you have an aldehyde, you have two carbons, and they are triple bonded to each other, and then each to something else, could be a hydroxyl group, or could be a hydrogen, or something else. So the thing is, double bonds and triple bonds are not stable. If you have only one double bond in the fat, then you have a monounsaturated fat. And because it's only one double bond, those are less likely to break down. So monounsaturated fats are more stable than polyunsaturated fats. Seed oils, your canola, your sunflower, your cottonseed oil, they are polyunsaturated fats. Now, if you go and heat them up, then they are likely to break down, and they're going to have oxidative damage. And then you wind up getting free radicals. And you also wind up getting trans fats. That heating process will lead to having trans fats. And the problem with trans fats is our bodies don't have trans fats in them naturally. I mean, we have some, but our structure is mostly made of cis fats. And if you consume a lot of trans fats, the trans fats, when they link things together, they tend to make things brittle, and so that they can break. So if you have trans fats hitting the structures of your cells, and also of the cells in your arteries are going to become more brittle, and they're going to be more prone to oxidative damage, and then your body's going to want to repair them, and now you're more likely to have atherosclerosis. So trans fats lead to oxidative damage and atherosclerosis, and they can lead to oxidative damage in your nerves. They can lead to oxidative damage anywhere you have fat, which is every single cell in your body. So when you have deep fried seed oils, you're more likely to get to have oxidative damage happen. So what happened was RFK Jr. apparently was talking about the dangers of seed oils, and people automatically think that seed oils, because they're from plants, are better for you than oils from meat. And there's, I don't remember the name of the restaurant, but there's a restaurant, I believe in Texas, or out west, not around here, that has decided they're going to deep fry their French fries in tallow, in beef tallow. And people went all up in arms because saturated fat is bad for you. And I'm here to say that saturated fat, if you look at the study, saturated fat has not been shown to raise or lower cholesterol. It will raise it in people who are cholesterol hyperproducers and hyperabsorbers. But if that's not you, it may not do anything to you. But the thing is, it doesn't cause oxidative damage, and you can heat a saturated fat. It's already saturated, so there's no double bonds to break. So in my opinion, tallow is actually a better thing to deep fry in than a seed oil, because it's a saturated fat. Likewise, butter is going to be better for you to deep fry in because it's a saturated fat. Now, if you have a fat and sugar and calorie issue, you may not want to have a lot of that stuff. And the other issue you have is that when you combine the tallow with potatoes, now you have starch plus fat, and you have elevated neuropeptide Y, and now you can't stop eating all your French fries, and you have a calorie situation. So there's that issue. So eating a ton of tallow with a lot of starch, now you're back to your neuropeptide Y situation. But if you're looking at preventing oxidative damage, you're going to have less oxidative damage if you consume the French fries that are deep fried in tallow than you are the French fries that are deep fried in cottonseed, canola, or sunflower, safflower oil. So he had a point there. And this was posted on some site online, and I explained that I thought that RFK was right on this one, and I got blasted. Blasted by someone who was very angry, who said, "They're both bad for you, period," and that I should stop lying to myself and others. So I thought that was very interesting, because this person was both arguing my point, but also attacking me. So they were doing two things at the same time, that they were doing they were trying to start a fight. And I teased out, when I thought about it later, I teased out that this person is very angry for whatever reason. I have no idea who they are or where they live. They came at me by saying, "You're lying to yourself and other people." Well, she doesn't know that that's what I'm doing. I'm merely sitting there trying to elucidate some science. So that person made a comment, and another person made a comment, and I said, "You know what? This is not worth it." And I thought about responding, but this is not a person who's in their right mind. So this is not somebody who I can discuss rationally the scientific points, which is what I was trying to do. So there was no point on me being on the site. So I hit, instead of responding to the comments, I deleted mine, and I decided that this is a better platform for me to share the idea that I think that deep fried in tallow is better for you than deep fried in saturated fat. So if you have it once in a while, it's probably not a bad thing, but do be aware that you do have the issue that when you're deep frying starch in fat, that you have that neuropeptide Y issue, and that's going to affect your blood sugar, and it's going to affect your satiety, and it could promote weight gain. So having deep fried potatoes regularly is probably, that part is true, it's probably not good for you. It's probably better for you to oven fry, where you're drizzling a bit of even tallow. You know, you could do tallow if you wanted to, or if not tallow, just a little bit of coconut oil or a little bit of olive oil, and you're drizzling it and you bake it in the oven. Those are going to be better for you, because the amount of oil is much lower. And I know when we have our oven fried potatoes, there's only so many I can eat, that there is a satiety thing that happens. So it's probably not enough oil to starch ratio to make me so that I can eat like a huge plate of those fries. I can't. I just feel stuffed. So that's good. So that's evidence that it's not wrecking my satiety. So those were very interesting things that happened this week. So I just wanted to comment on you know, the measles outbreak and deep frying stuff. Oh, and we were going to talk about daylight savings time. I think there's not enough time to talk about what's going on with daylight savings time
coming soon.
yes. So I'll talk about that next week. And when you're finally hearing the information about daylight savings time, it'll still be of interest and still be affecting you. So I'll talk about it next week. All right. So therefore, I'm hoping to see you at the Know Your Farmer Fair Saturday, March 8th, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Free admission, Wyndham Community Center, 1 Gilson Square, Willimantic, Connecticut. And Ron will be there and I'll be there. All right. And I'm going to sign off now. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores, and WHUS.org.